Hey, hey, welcome to PermaDeath Weekly for the week of April 27th. That's right, that's a Saturday. It's not a Friday. In fact, I'm recording this on April 27th. Same day, same date. We're ready to rock and roll. I didn't get around to doing it this week, and in fact, I didn't know if I would. I went and saw Avengers Endgame, but also my throat's been a little funky. I have a doctor's appointment next week to take a look at that. But you know what? I couldn't let this week go by without putting something up. So if you're listening to this, you're probably listening to this on your podcast device. Not that your device is just for podcasts, although it should be. Because, I mean, the most important part of your week is right here with me, your host, Bill Conway. The YouTube upload might be a bit delayed for this. Might come on Monday or so. Depends when I get around to it. I just really wanted to get something up this week because I take pride so far in not missing an episode. Doing something weekly is an accomplishment. Just as much as an accomplishment as me starting on my 2019 Permadeath goals that we set in our first episode of the new year, of our actual main show, the Permadeath podcast, which again, if you're listening on this feed, you've probably already listened to. And if you haven't, if Permadeath Weekly brought you to this feed, that is our main behemoth monthly show where we're two of my friends and I sit down and talk about what we've been playing for the month. So check that out if you haven't. But I started playing Final Fantasy VI, or III, as it's known in the States, but it's VI, this weekend. I haven't played much of it, maybe about an hour or so. Because that was one of my goals. One of my goals this year was to beat Final Fantasy VI, beat Final Fantasy IX, and play Chrono Trigger. And, you know, there's no better time to start it than now. You know, any goal you have, start it right away. Don't wait. You want to lose that weight? You want to play Final Fantasy VI? Go right the fuck ahead. So this week's track of the week is Terra's theme from Final Fantasy VI, a song that instantly became a favorite of mine. You know, just such a great track. Really cool game so far. Really enjoying my time with it. I gotta sneeze. You know, this is one of those things that just bothers me. You know, you could be having an incredible take while recording something, and then something weird happens with your body. Oh man, I gotta blow my nose, or oh man, I'm gonna sneeze. Well, I'm gonna fight it, because I figured out the best method for stopping a sneeze. Now, I hear a lot of things, a lot of rumors and speculation about holding in your sneezes. People say it could, like, really damage your head. I was always told the extreme version of this is that it will blow your eyes out of your sockets. Now, as far as I know, I've never seen that happen. If you have seen that happen, and it is true, then okay, I will go forward with that being a possibility. But I was told that by one of my teachers in eighth grade. That's a weird scare tactic. And they didn't seem to laugh after it. So maybe they've seen it. But I have heard it can actually do damage and like do shit to your brain. Because like, that explosion happens somewhere. That's maybe the one reason I believe that your eyes could pop out of your head. Is because when you hold that sneeze in, that's like eating a grenade. You know? That poof is happening still. You know, you're not getting rid of the sneeze. It's happening. It's just, you just ain't letting it out. But I figured out the way to not have to worry about holding in sneezes. Is just, when you feel a sneeze coming on, or you feel like, oh man, okay, give me 45 seconds and I'm gonna sneeze. Like, you can kind of feel the build up to that. Most sneezes aren't surprise attacks. Most sneezes, you can feel them sneaking up on you. So what you need to do is just steady your breathing and breathe out. Little breath in, because you have to keep breathing or you'll die. But little breath out. Don't give the sneeze any leg room, because when you keep breathing in, you're letting that tickle take effect. Suffer that. Fucking smother that thing, man. Push it off of the front line. I have not sneezed once since doing that. At work. I'll sneeze at home all day. I'll sneeze to the heavens. But at work, I don't know when snot's coming out. You know? Then it's like, oh, I gotta get up and, like, you know, there's no dignified way to walk halfway across the building to the bathroom to get a tissue. I know you're thinking, Bill, just buy tissues for your desk. But then where am I throwing that fucking snot rag in the middle of the goddamn day? I'm not gonna let snot sit on my desk. Would you? You know? Come on. Fuck you think I am? Savage? Anyway, I'll tell you who are savages Epic Games! Not in a good way either. Our first story this week. This is why I needed to do the episode this week, because there are, it's one of the first news weeks where there's stuff that's really significant, that I really wanted to cover, because I've been thinking about this all gen, pretty much. And, you know, this is the generation of games as a service. This is the generation of, you know, every game being a live product. You know, developers have found the way to make the most money by only making one game, you know, and just monetizing that one game over years and months. You know, we've seen it take over with Destiny. You know, we've seen The Division and For Honor and a lot of Ubisoft games. You know, they've even figured out a way to make single player games as a service, with Assassin's Creed and everything. And, you know, and some of these things have found great success. Some of these things are worthy, you know, of being around. You know, when you say games as a service, to me, it doesn't automatically mean a bad game. It doesn't automatically mean the developer is going to fleece your ass, you know, but more often than not, ends up being the case. And we've had several good examples of games as a service, and we were talking about BioWare and the next Dragon Age and Anthem and all of that on a previous episode of Permadeath Weekly. And I brought up, you know, good examples of these, you know, games that don't fleece your customer. And Fortnite was one that I brought up. You know, Fortnite gives you a service that you want. You know, players get something that they want and they'll happily depart with their money for the cosmetics. So it's a relationship between player and developer that is healthy, you know, for the most part, from a financial and respect position. You know, Epic puts out a product, player gets said product for free. Anything cosmetic is what costs money. And people willingly fork out the V-Bucks. Well, that comes at a cost of the human psyche. I always wondered, you know, we hear about crunch and we hear about that last push before you launch a game. And then after that, you know, the game's out, you know, depending on how broken your game is, most work probably ceases for a bit and people get to take a break. But games as a service are never really out. If that makes sense. Games as a service are never really finished. These things are expected to be updated often because the precedent set by certain examples are what drives player expectations. And we've seen it. This story of Epic Games coincides very well with the story of Apex Legends and its current... you know, I really hesitate to say drop in popularity because people want to say Apex Legends is dying or whatever because Respawn isn't taking care of the players in a timely manner the way Epic Games does. But, you know, Fortnite pushes out weekly updates, which is fucking insane, you know. But it's a precedent they've set for themselves, and it's a corner they back themselves up into because that's the philosophy they've maintained throughout all of Fortnite, is that every week you're going to get something. And that pacing... I mean, I think that's detrimental to the quality of content too, because so many things get added and then, this kind of sucks. Players don't like this. There's no testing period for a lot of this shit. It just gets shoved out into the game, you know, and then the testing period is making it live, you know, and I think there's a value in letting your updates cook, you know, but I also understand you have a fan base as large as Fortnite's who now expect weekly updates. You kind of have to do it in a weird way or you upset people. But at the same time, you're making money hand over fist with this game. I think you can afford to maybe slow down the updates. Because these updates are resulting in insane crunch at Epic Games. You know, games as a service, especially ones as large as Fortnite, are never done. They're never out. There's never that period of time where, okay, we're crunching for a month or two, and then it's over. And that's not good either. I'm not excusing that. But I'm saying the limited nature of certain developments' crunch times doesn't exist with something like this. And, you know, and I'm curious what happens with Destiny. You know, how was Destiny, you know, at launch? You know, like the hours people work on these games as a service is something that hasn't really been talked about too much in the whole crunch conversation until now. And turns out to put out weekly updates of Fortnite, you have people working 70 hours a week. And this is not, this article comes from Polygon. Chris Campbell wrote a big piece about the crunch at Epic Games, talked to several developers and outlined everything that goes on there. And the sad part about this is constant. There is no end to this, you know? Because even, because Fortnite still holds the early access banner, but we're on like season 8, 9 of this fucking game. Like, it's out at this point. Take the early access off. This is Fortnite. This is the Fortnite that exists. These work weeks won't change. They need weekly updates. Like, it's insane. So you have, one employee in the article states they work average 70 hours a week. And there's probably at least 50 or even 100 other people at Epic working those hours. I know people who pull 100 hour weeks. The company gives us unlimited time off, but it's almost impossible to take the time. If I take time off, the workload falls on other people, and no one wants to be that guy. The biggest problem is that we're patching all the time. The executives are focused on keeping Fortnite popular for as long as possible, especially with all the new competition that's coming in. Jesus Christ! That's the, you know, it's funny. You have these companies that offer, oh man, you guys got a limited time off. Yeah, no biggie. But it's like, it's almost like they know you can't take it, so that's what they give you. Like, there's, oh, I feel guilt when I call off work sick. And no one's even getting my workload usually. So it's a thing of like, you have these instances where all of these guys are in this together, and you have this situation where, man, if I call off, if I take a week's vacation with my unlimited time off, then, you know, which poor sap is my job to make the fucking hamster ball gonna fall on? That's gonna add potentially 10 hours to his work day, or his work week rather. You know? It's just a crazy, crazy situation. It's the instance of trying to meet player demand, and they set the precedent. It says here in the article, the executives keep reacting and changing things. Everything has to be done immediately. We're not allowed to spend time on anything. If something breaks, a weapon, say, then we can't just turn it off and fix it with the next patch. It has to be fixed immediately. And all the while, we're still working on next week's patch. It's brutal. I hardly sleep. I'm grumpy at home. I have no energy to go out. Getting a weekend away from work is a major achievement. If I take a Saturday off, I feel guilty. I'm not being forced to work this way, but if I won't, then the job won't get done. So man, like, I feel we live in a world where, this is where I'll transition into the Apex Legends stuff, where people, because of this, you know, especially in the Battle Royale scene, if you don't have an update scheduled like Fortnite, people get pissed. People get antsy. People want to call you out. Like people were calling out Apex and their battle pass even. It was kind of a little lackluster. But it was a battle pass that came out very soon after the game came out. And I assumed didn't have a lot of time to iterate. Didn't have a lot of time in the oven. A lot of the rewards are undercooked and whatever. But it was a situation of like, man, we got all these fucking players out of nowhere on Apex Legends, and they all want something. You know, they want a reward path. They want something. We have to get something out to please them. We may not be ready to do it, but we have to. Because people expect, if you're going to compete in this market, in this battle royale genre, your game needs to be updating constantly. Where is the content? There's no content. People will cry out. It's like, the content's there, man. These people aren't superhuman. So after the whole Epic Games thing broke and the nature of their crunch working on Fortnite, the producer of Apex Legends, Drew McCoy, put out a blog post saying, you know, blah, 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 you know, we hit 50 million players in the first month and, you know, it's incredible and, you know, they didn't expect this kind of success. You know, it's their first swing at a free-to-play game. Where is it at here? Yeah, so, well, hiccup, sorry, I had some waffles. He basically, you know, gives a little roadmap for certain patches of the game, and little changes they're going to be making, and sorry, hiccups again. You know, it's really unprofessional. Sorry, aside, you know, like I said last year, I've been taking that podcast class. People said, don't eat. If you're lactose intolerant, don't eat any dairy before a podcast. Don't drink any soda before a podcast, because you never know when the gas is going to hit you. Turns out I had butter about 40 minutes ago. So, you know. Thinking, I wasn't expecting to sit down and record this. So, sorry. Using my education money wisely here. But basically the blog post, you know, details a lot about future, technical changes and updates and things like that and launches of seasons and how they're committed to using the seasons to push out content and not do weekly updates like Fortnite. They want to reiterate that they need to keep their team happy. and to make sure that they can maintain the culture of Respawn. You know, I don't know much about their crunch culture. I don't know what they do. There have never really been any testimonials about what it was like to work on Titanfall, what it might be like to work on Jedi Fallen Order. But what you could infer from this blog post from Drew McCoy is that they try not to do that. And in order to make sure the Apex Legends team is happy, in order to make sure that these updates are good, and, you know, to make sure that the quality of content isn't so haphazard and like, oh man, well, we put this thing out this week and it broke. Well, we got to fucking walk it back while working on something else. It's important not to set a precedent that Fortnite has set for themselves. And people might be disappointed in this, but again, they said it says right here in the blog post, we want to maintain our culture as a development team and avoid crunch that can quickly lead to burnout or worse. You know, and the worst being you have little quips from this Fortnite article, quips from these BioWare articles, and now also, I'm not going to cover it this week, but the NetherRealm stuff with Mortal Kombat 9, 10, and like Injustice, you know, they treat their contractors like shit. But you have these quips, you know, of people breaking down in tears and hiding in closets and having to get therapy and stuff, you know, just so somebody could fucking have a balanced SMG in Fortnite. It's insane. So I have big respect. Now, the timing of Apex Legends blog post came after the Fortnite article, but it was also something you could infer yourself, I believe, even without them making a statement. You know, people were bitching about slow content, but it's like, man, not everybody could do what Fortnite does, because not everybody has epic money, and not everybody has the willingness to work their employees to sawdust, you know, to add a fucking hamster ball. So really, you know, games as a service, this is one of the things I was always curious about, because these games never end. And I've been waiting for a story on what it's like to work on one of these things continuously. It's an endless labyrinth of updates and feedback, you know, and, you know, it's not cool. You know, I really want to read into, somebody brought up in the comments that this reminds them of 2011, like Riot Games, like with League of Legends. Which I'm going to assume I don't know shit about this, by the way, but I assume that's probably like the rise of them, like when League of Legends got huge. I can't imagine what that was like either. You know, when you have these games that like are suddenly huge successes, you want to try to capitalize on that, you know, but like, where's the end? Because these games don't end. You know, where do you stop? Where do you say, okay, guys, let's go back to a normal work week? With Fortnite, maybe never. Speaking of Epic Games, we have more Epic Games stuff to talk about. Now, this one is weird. You know, the perception of Epic is interesting. You know, their name alone is so contentious in games media and amongst gaming communities with the whole Epic Game Store stuff. Now with the Fortnite crunch, you know, Tim Sweeney and folks are, you know, they have a lot of ill will coming their way. I personally don't have much issue using the Epic Games launcher, but I did say, you know, a few weeks ago on the show, you know, it's as simple as just using another browser. I say that, and, you know, I read a lot of people's opinions on it, and some people are dicks about it. No doubt in my mind. But I also don't want to dismiss any legitimate reasons for not wanting to use the Epic Store. Because there are a lot of people who don't mind using Origin or using Uplay. These are people who don't care about using those things. It's just Epic Game Store lacks certain things for them that make a launcher worth using. And there are criticisms of it. Epic Game Store is not perfect, and I don't want to seem dismissive of people's concerns with it. I'm mostly dismissive towards the people who say things, like the other day, this isn't an article that I'm covering or anything, it's not even a headline that's in the rundown, but somebody tweeted out the devs for Satisfactory, which is the like 3D, or not 3D, the first person like Factorio type game. That's exclusive right now to the Epic Game Store. And they tweeted at him like, hey, put it on Steam or I'm stealing your game. And he responded and, you know, called the guy a child pretty much. And, you know, people kind of called them both in the wrong. But it's like, dude, you have this guy threatening to steal someone's work because it's not on their preferred storefront. People like that are the babies. But I just wanted to walk back some things I might have said, you know, because, you know, I like reading people's opinions. And, you know, I take a lot of it in every week, and you know, minds can change, and you could gain new perception on certain things. So I understand where people's concerns come from with the Epic Games Store. I personally just don't really have much going on in my brain that that if a game looks cool and it's on there, I'm going to buy it. So, you know, it is what it is. But Tim Sweeney mentioned the big hullabaloo about it is Epic Games buying up all these exclusives. You know, games that have been listed on Steam and now they're not on Steam and now they're on Epic Game Store. You know, and it seems like a very forced headlock way to try to gain foothold in the competition. Tim Sweeney, where did he say this, by the way? I'm looking at a Kotaku article, but oh, he tweeted. He said, if Steam committed to a permanent 88% revenue share for all developers and publishers without major strings attached, Epic would hastily organize a retreat from exclusives and consider putting our own games on Steam. That seems like a dickish thing to say in a weird way. It's like, well, like, I mean, what gives them the, I kind of would love to see Valve do that and see if Tim Sweeney's, you know, talking real here. I want them to do it so bad. Like, is he bluffing here? Like, and then he follows up with, such a move would be a glorious moment in the history of PC gaming and would have a sweeping impact on other platforms for generations to come. Then stores could go back to just being nice places to buy stuff rather than the game developer IRS. I mean, I mean, it's become a pissing match because of what he's doing. I mean, I get the, here's one thing I get. I don't think they should be buying exclusives. You know, I feel like players should be given a choice. I don't feel like it's the dramatic, you know, crack in the crust of PC gaming that some people think it is. Because ultimately, you're still playing on your platform. A lot of people liken it to consoles and console wars, but it's like, ultimately, I still have my 1070 and my PC and my i7. Like, I'm still playing the same games on my same hardware. You know, as long as Epic themselves aren't capping frame rates or anything like that, I'm fine. But I understand giving players the choice. And if they want to give the developers more money on Epic, then they will buy it there. So it's a weird thing for him to say, hey, man, it'd be really nice if we could stop this pissing match, but until you guys raise your thing, I'm just going to keep creating it. Such a weird statement. The sole person creating this fucking mess amongst storefronts, it's like he's holding games hostage. Such a weird statement. And again, like, I have no, you know, horse in this race, really, one way or the other. But, I mean, yeah. Now, I mean, you know, he cares about the developers. Maybe go ahead and give your developers some time off, you fucker. Anyway, that's all really. I just wanted to bring that up because I think it's so strange. You know what else is strange? Now, it's strange. Oh, but it's my destiny, baby. So, Atlus did their whole Persona 5 blowout this week. They announced Persona 5 The Royal, which adds a new Phantom Thief, a whole bunch of new Confidant stuff, some small changes. They expand on city exploration, stuff like that. It's basically Persona 4 The Golden, but for Persona 5. So I'm really excited about that. They also announced their Persona 5S, which for the longest time everyone was speculating was Persona 5 Switch. Like, of course. You know, and you wouldn't be wrong to want to assume that. Because, you know, Joker got added to Smash. I was like, whoa, wow, here we go. You know, and Persona 5S has been, that acronym has been around for months now. Same with Persona 5R. And people assume, well, one is like a golden remake, and the other is the Switch version of potentially the vanilla game. But instead, Persona 5S turned out to be Persona 5 Scramble, Phantom Strikers, which is a motherfucking Musou Warriors game developed by Omega Force. Oh, I want to get up and scream so bad. You have no idea. I want to stand up out of this fucking chair right now. I'm so hyped on adrenaline. Just thinking about playing a fucking Warriors game set in Persona 5 with that game's visual style and its music and its characters and its fucking personas. Oh my god. Oh my god. I'm so ready to fucking go. Oh, here we go. Dude, want to be honest with you. I feel for everybody wanting this to be the Switch version. You know, I feel for you guys because I think it's bullshit. I think it's bullshit because Persona 5S Phantom Strikers is also coming to Nintendo Switch. So you are getting Persona on Switch, but it feels like, wow, what the fuck, guys? You're going to give me this, but you're not going to give me Persona 5 the Royal? Atlas, could you throw the general gaming community a bone and just put the Royal on Switch as well? It's fucking strange. That's strange to me. I don't quite understand it. You know? So I get people's frustration. But what I want to say, and I want to throw down gauntlet right now. I had a tweet the other day when this was announced during the week, that if you disparage this game, if you treat this game like garbage because you didn't get the Switch version, it's not this game's fault. Leave this game out of it. I am one of the biggest Warriors defenders on Earth, and I will fight you in the streets. I will take you out to the middle of my street, block traffic, and fucking fight you. You know, I don't fight. I have never had a fist fight in my life. But everybody needs to experience these life milestones once. Your first fist fight, your first baby, you know, the first time you drink a beer. Let's go ahead and knock two of those out right now. I will chug a lager, and then I will charge you full steam ahead like the Blazing Bull in Sekiro. I will beat you up. I will beat up every gamer on the internet who treats Persona 5 Scramble like garbage, because it's a fucking Musou game. Oh, let's go, baby. Oh, you have no idea how excited I am for this. You have no idea. This is the most surprising, ridiculous announcement that could have happened. And I am so goddamn... That's all I have to say about it. Thinking about the music and, like, playing as each Phantom Thief and getting to use their personas to just smash thousands of enemies? Come on. Come on, man. And who knows if they'll add, like, some of the social elements as, like, a little side thing. Because a lot of these Warriors spinoffs, not even spinoffs in general, but even the mainline games, like Orochi and Dynasty and Samurai, have these little hub world social elements to them. Warriors Orochi already has that shit covered. So I can't imagine there potentially being some Shujin Academy stuff in this game. Because all we have is, like, a minute and a half of just, like, him smashing some fools with his persona. So yeah, guys, look, this is my most hyped announcement of the fucking week, the gen. I don't know. I love a good Musou. I love a bad Musou. So give me a Musou set in Persona 5. Baby, I'm more excited for this than the Royal. Let me tell you. Sorry, I had to explode there. Yeah, so what about does it for the news this week? Pretty good episode of things to talk about. A lot of sad stories about Crunch. I did see Avengers Endgame, and I'm not really going to talk about this movie in any detail whatsoever, because I feel like if I, and this is what I tweeted pretty much, if you have devoted any time at all to the MCU, whether it's, oh, I like the Iron Man movies, or, oh, I've seen Guardians of the Galaxy and, like, some of the Captain America movies, people will tell you, oh, you have to watch this. I don't care. If you've devoted any time to this universe and you like this universe, I mean, obviously watch Infinity War first, but this is, like, your payday. Like, Endgame is like, this is your payoff. This is the culmination of all of that time you've devoted into this universe, into the MCU. And it was a phenomenal time. I had an absolute blast. They stuck the landing. And for them to stick the landing is so impressive to me. Because, especially in a time where everyone's anxious about stuff like that. Game of Thrones is ending in a few weeks, and I'll definitely have thoughts on that. Ken Russ and I might even do something for that. I get so anxious about endings, in because ultimately, that's what everyone ends up talking about, no matter how good the rest of something is. Look at Mass Effect. Mass Effect 3, I think, is a fantastic game. So many amazing moments. Mass Effect 3, to me, is one giant ending. So many threads just come to a close there. But its ending was weak. It was weak. And that's all anyone could talk about. So the fact that Endgame stuck it, did their victory lap, and left it, you know, with their head held high, it was such an amazing thing to witness. And I was on such a high leaving that movie. Those 3 hours flew by. Definitely go see it. I thought it was fantastic. And I'm not even like a diehard MCU guy. I've seen them all. I like the MCU. I think it's a really neat thing. There are movies I like more than others. There are some movies I don't particularly care for. But, you know, I always love the Avengers films, and it was awesome, man. There are so many moments in that movie that just left me in awe. The last act in particular, that last hour of that movie was just, Jesus Christ, man. They pulled it off. You know, so now Game of Thrones, please God, stick your landing too. Please make me a happy boy. So yeah, that's all I got for you this week on Permadeath Weekly. I wasn't going to do an episode, but you know what? I'm sitting here on Saturday afternoon. Decided to do it. Next week I will have some impressions on Days Gone. I haven't started it yet. I know the internet's critics are lukewarm, but I'm seeing a lot of positivity from people playing it. So, I'm still excited to check it out. You know, that's another thing I want to say. I want to say really quick. We live in a weird world with review scores, you know, and this could be such a long topic, but there's nothing wrong with a 7, man. A lot of, like, Days Gone right now on OpenCritic has like a 73. That's not a bad score, dude. Not everything needs to be a fucking 10. Not everything needs to be a 9.75 in order to be something worth your time. And there's such a sad state to where, I mean, I don't really pay attention to reviews. I don't let them really dictate what I buy. I'm somebody who bought and loved The Order 1886. If something looks cool and I watch a trailer and some gameplay footage, you know, and read some stuff from it, and like, okay, yeah, this sounds like something I'll enjoy playing, I'll just buy it. And I know people can't be that, you know, haha with their money. And I'm not even saying that. I don't buy that many games. You know, I buy like one major game every now and again, you know, and, you know, when something like Days Gone comes around, then it's like, well, this game got a 5 from GameSpot, a 6.5 from IGN. Yeah, but it also got a 7.75 from Easy Allies. It's getting 7s and 8s other places. You know, people want to focus on that one really bad review and really like, look at them all in a box. And it all culminates to a 7. This game is a 7 out of 10. You know, that is what the whole picture, you know, coalesced to. This thing is a 7 out of 10. And there's nothing wrong with that. To echo Michael Huber from Easy Allies, swimming in 7s. There's nothing wrong with a 7. And people will say, like, well, in today's day and age, you're either a 10 or you're not worth playing because there's so many good games coming out. Dude, you know how stupid you sound? You know how absolutely dumb you sound? Look up some of your favorite Steam games. Look up their Metacritics. Because there's such a disparity between user reviews and the critics' reviews of things. And that's such a tired thing to talk about, too. It's like, oh, look at the Rotten Tomatoes score. Look at the critics' meter and then the audience meter. The audience meter is usually always going to be higher than the critics' meter. Unless it's some art house movie where the critics were peeing themselves over it. And most people watch it and go, what the fuck did I just see? But my example is you look at something like My Time at Porsche. Okay? Now, when I buy games on Steam, I usually look at the user reviews for these things. That's the first place your eyes go. And user reviews, again, can also be very hard to gauge as well because of review bombing and, you know, just there's a lot of things to take into account. So you do have to read. You still have to use your comprehension skills to suss out what these reviews mean. But for the longest time, you know, it's funny, I use this as an example. The recent reviews for Porsche are mixed at the moment. Now, I am not sure what those are for. They got a ton of negative reviews on April 24th. So I don't know what happened on April 24th. But that's what caused it to dive to mixed. Otherwise, the reviews overall are very positive out of almost 10,000 reviews for My Time at Porsche. Very positive. That's a really 90% of those reviews were positive. My Time at Porsche's Metacritic score is 73. Same as Days Gone. But if you don't look at the Metacritic and you just kind of get the general vibes of the people playing it, you go, wow, okay, I like farming. I like Stardew. I like crafting. I'll check this game out. I'll spend my money on it. I've been reading the general consensus of Days Gone on Reset Era and Reddit and stuff. Be like, oh man, you know what? I like open world games. I like zombies. This game isn't like The Last of Us or Red Dead, but it's a lot of fun. But people will look at that Metacritic score for some reason and think a 7 is trash. I think a discredit. People want to talk about, you know, treating devs like shit. People want to talk about, you know, crunch and all of these things. And then gamers will turn right around and act like this for things that aren't what they appear to be. People love to wax poetic about the fucking loss of the AA developer, of the AA game. Where's the game that's not as good as the AAAs or not as good as you know, it's not like a pure indie, but, you know, those nice 7 out of 10 games that we used to play back in the PS1 and the PS2, where do they go? You know, games are so expensive to create nowadays. What happened to those? It's because every time one comes out, now, Days Gone, not a AA game. This is a first-party studio from Sony. But I'm talking about review scores as a whole. I'm talking about general reaction to things as a whole. People want to lean on Metacritic and OpenCritic so goddamn much and review scores so goddamn much that that's instantly, you know, what the game is. Those games, most of those games are 7s out of 10. There's nothing wrong with a 7 out of 10. That's a good fucking score if you're using the whole scale, which is what most gamers don't do anymore. There's 10 points on that scale, dude. 10 points. When you're at 7 out of 10, you've made it past the low valleys of those 10 points. I can see if this game had a 30. Yeah, wow, stay away from that. But a 70%. It's good, man. You pass with that grade, dude. And people will say, oh, it's different in the games, though, because critics don't use that scale. Yeah, if you're following the right critics, they do. You know, if you're following the right outlets, they do use the whole scale. You know, granted, yes, some places don't. But generally, I mean, you can kind of get an idea if you're smart. And that sounds insulting, but again, you know, maybe, I don't know, man. I don't know. It's upsetting to me when I see it. You know, people instantly go ape shit when something gets a 7. Oh, well, dead game. It sucks. No, it's a 7. It's an average game. It's not blowing anybody's doors down like a Breath of the Wild or a Red Dead Redemption 2 or a God of War. But it's also not a steaming pile of offensive garbage either. If you like open world games, might be worth checking out. Just saying. Or any genre for that matter. Like I said, Time of Portia, 73 on Metacritic. If you're going by just Metacritic, oh, 7, it sucks. Yeah, it's a rough game. But, I mean, it's a studio, but it doesn't have a lot of money. They did what they could with it. It's kind of rough. Still probably in early access, you know, philosophically, you know, from looking at how it plays still. And the console versions are missing a lot of content. But, you know, it generally, it plays well if that's your niche. So, I wish more people would do that. I wish more people would do that, you know, instead of just living and dying by the meta. It's sad. But all of my thoughts on that game coming up. I'm honestly excited to play it. I'm more excited. It's funny, you know, before it came out, I was kind of like, okay, yeah, this game looks decent. You know, I think most people were expecting it to be a 7. No one was hyping it up to be the next Red Dead or Last of Us or whatever. And after it came out and hearing some people's opinions whom I trust, I think I'm more excited to get into it more than ever because I know what my expectations are. I know what to expect of it. So I'm excited for it. I'll let you know what I think of it. So again, this has been Permadeath Weekly. You can follow me, Bill Conway, on Twitter at Pepperham. You can follow the show at Permapodcast. This YouTube upload, not sure when it'll be up exactly. So you can't necessarily leave a comment down below, but you can tweet us, which works the same exact way. And if you don't have a Twitter, make one. I know it's trash on there, but make one anyway. Just talk to me. You don't have to follow anybody else. You can make your Twitter app just the Permadeath Podcast app. Just the Permadeath Podcast community app. Which, if you'd rather, you can also download Discord and find us on there. Links to that, you know what? I'll put that in my Twitter description because I don't think it's in there. You can find us on Discord. We're all in there. We're active. We're chatting it up. You can ask us questions in there for future shows. You can also email us at permadeathpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of the show. Let us know what you think of me. Really give it to me, too. If you think I stink, let me know. Have a good one, everybody.